Thank you very much, Judge Clement, and good morning, Judge Higginbottom, Judge Haynes. My name is Charles Cooper. I represent the appellants in the first case this morning. This court's recent decision in NRA against BATF adopted a two-step framework for evaluating Second Amendment claims. The step one inquiry is simply, does the regulated conduct fall within the scope of the Second Amendment's protection? Now, in this case, that entails two subsidiary threshold questions. The first one is, does the scope of the Second Amendment extend outside the home? The district court in this case held that it does not. The second one is, does the scope of the Second Amendment extend to 18 to 20-year-old persons? If the answer to either of those questions is no, I lose. If the answer to both of them is yes, the court proceeds to the second step in the two-step inquiry. And absent questions from the bench this morning, I don't plan to direct my arguments to either of those threshold steps, but rather get to the point where I think the rubber meets the road here, which is step two inquiry, and what level of heightened scrutiny would apply in this case, strict or intermediate or some variation of those familiar levels of scrutiny. And I think the BATF case controls that inquiry here, I believe, obviously. And
I mean, your 28J letter said that's completely irrelevant, the BATFs, and now you're acknowledging that the BATF case does have some force. Is that only because I'm on the panel or because you've revisited that analysis?
Oh, no. Well, we certainly didn't mean to suggest that it's completely irrelevant. To the contrary. It bears obviously and directly on this case. It governs the test for determining the appropriate level of scrutiny. Now, to be sure, Your Honor, as you know, we respectfully disagree with the panel's decision, and we've filed our rehearing petition. But accepting BATF as we find it, it clearly requires that the appropriate level of scrutiny be determined and properly tuned, and these are the words of the BATF court, in a way that is proportionate to the severity of the burden that the law imposes on the right. Proportionate to the severity of the burden. And elsewhere in that opinion, the court, quoting the Fourth Circuit in the Chester case, said a severe burden on the core Second Amendment right of armed self-defense should require a strong justification. A couple of lines later, this court in BATF said, a regulation that threatens a right at the core of the Second Amendment triggers strict scrutiny. Well, accepting those propositions, again, as we find them.
Let me ask you this. Texas's carry bill is fairly recent, 1995. So prior to that, was Texas in violation of the Second Amendment?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so you feel like it's required to have some form of concealed carry permitting process at a minimum. Is that your position?
Our position is that the Second Amendment extends outside the home.
Okay.
And so a permit, if permitting is required, as Texas does, for either an open or a concealed carry license is a constitutional minimum, yes. And so before...
So where were y'all prior to 1995?
Litigating Heller. And Heller and Heller controls this case.
Okay, so you're controls saying that this case. That this right existed before 1995 but wasn't really realized until Heller.
Your Honor, the Constitution required what it required since 1791. Heller now controls this court with respect to what the Constitution requires. And BATF controls this panel with respect to what level of scrutiny applies.
Well,
again,
if you don't win your petition for rehearing en banc in the BATF case,
yes,
then we're bound by that
absolutely.
Prior panel.
Yes. Right. Yes, Your Honor. And again, the test established by BATF for determining the level of scrutiny was whether it is properly tuned and proportionate to the severity of the burden that the law imposes on the right. And if that's true, in this case, strict scrutiny is the only test that is properly tuned and proportionate to the burden.
But we have to accept your premise that Texas must allow concealed carry, maybe with some, you know, licensing, permitting, whatever. You don't seem to be challenging the notion of permitting.
No.
But you are telling us that it's required to allow concealed carry and or open carry, which is being debated in
right.
Texas. So you're saying people have a right to walk around with guns on the street, whether concealed or open, and anything else is a burden on that, narrowly tailored, et cetera.
You're not arguing that here, are you?
Yes, I am. Your Honor, I am arguing essentially.
Even though you are.
So
you think a college kid should be able to take their guns to college?
Not necessarily
to college.
No, Your Honor.
Okay,
no.
Well, that's,
no.
That was the inference of Judge Haynes' question. I thought you agreed.
Not at all. We think Heller recognizes that there are limits, longstanding limits, on sensitive places where you can carry a gun. So no person would have a constitutional right to carry a gun in an educational facility, and I think Heller's clear on that. But I think Heller is also clear, and if Heller's not clear, the history of the Second Amendment and the language of the Second Amendment could not simply be clearer that it does apply outside the home. So yes, Judge Haynes, carrying either open or, concealed, but carrying, the right to bear a firearm is a constitutional right, and it extends beyond the home. And
so walking down the street,
I hope we can assume that it does extend beyond the home. I didn't read Heller to say otherwise. It's in describing the core values of the Second Amendment as to define the outer limits of the Second Amendment. So our problem here is that we're not talking about the core values of protecting the home. And now, what it seems to me that I'd like for you to give us an analytical framework for resolving this placement of the of regulation in the scheme.
Judge Higginbottom?
What you think it ought to be.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. I think BATF is correct when it identified what the core value of the Second Amendment is, the core value. When it quoted Chester, as I quoted a moment ago, a severe burden on the core Second Amendment right of armed self-defense. That's the core of the Second Amendment. The core is not limited to the home. It's self-defense. That's the core. And if that right, that core right, is severely burdened, then that triggers strict scrutiny. The BTF panel said precisely that. And so accepting, again, that here, the Texas law couldn't be a more severe burden on that core right of self-defense outside of the home. It couldn't, because it's a wholesale ban. It is a categorical.
What do we do now when we're not talking about 18-year-olds, 18 to 20, in terms of how do you place the state's regulatory power over minorities? Common law, the minority was 20 and younger.
So, Your Honor, BATF doesn't decide that question.
No.
The court said it was inclined to decide that against me, but it assumed that 18 to 20-year-olds have Second Amendment rights. And with all due respect.
Let's accept that. But are there lesser rights, or at least they are more vulnerable, amenable to regulation than the core rights of the which we know exist for protection of the home? In other words, the Second Amendment scope reaches there. The question is it a right, though, that can be more easily burdened? Inevitably, we're talking about the level of scrutiny with which we're going to examine this particular regulatory scheme.
Yes.
Now, how would you articulate it? You don't want a rational basis test, I don't think.
No, Your Honor,
That's off the table.
It's off the table.
That's right. Now, so what are you talking about, some intermediate or?
I'm talking about strict scrutiny, Judge Higginbottom. I'm talking about what BATF said. If it is true that the severity of the burden on the core Second Amendment right governs the level of scrutiny, then I submit to you it follows that strict scrutiny applies here, because this burden. Keep in mind, what did the court say in BATF about the federal burden? That it didn't burden the core right of self-defense. It didn't. 18 to 20s were simply prohibited from buying a gun from a licensed federal dealer. They weren't prohibited from possessing it, using it for any lawful purpose, including self-defense, anywhere in the home or elsewhere. They could acquire a gun from their parent or from the secondary market. So the court emphasized there's very little burden on the core Second Amendment right of self-defense under that statute. How does that contrast with what we're looking at in Texas? It's a categorical disqualification.
Well, do you differ with BATF's recitation of a sort of a dip into history at earlier points in time and where they suggest that the cite various sources that assert that regulation historically of minors?
Your Honor, we do respectfully disagree with that. The one thing we think.
Where would you point us to? I think history has an awful lot to do with this particular thing, so help me with that.
Absolutely, Your Honor. History, we would say, under Heller, controls this inquiry. And what is the relevant history? Constitutional rights, according to Heller, and I'm quoting now, are enshrined with the scope that they were understood to have when the people adopted them, 1791. Well, what did the people understand about the scope of the rights with respect to 18 to 20-year-olds? What did they understand in 1791? The Militia Act, passed in 1792, define the militia to include all able-bodied males above the age 18 and above. Every state included males 18 and above in their own militias. We also know from the history, Judge Higginbottom, that the purpose, the reason the Second Amendment exists, the reason it was codified, was to protect the militia from elimination, from destruction, from the federal government disarming the militia. So if the Second Amendment protects anybody, it protects members of the militia. And the one thing we know with absolute certainty is that the militia included 18 and 20-year-olds. That's the end. That's the end of the 18 to 20-year-olds.
14 and 15-year-olds in there, too.
They had 16-year-olds, to be sure. Your Honor, and the case for arguing for 16-year-olds as having a right to keep and bear arms is much better than the case arguing against 18-year-olds. But we're here to say we think that case is weak. It was a controversial issue. The federal government didn't believe it. George Washington, General Washington, didn't believe it. And that pretty much controlled everything else. Secretary Knox didn't believe it.
You're running out of time. I just want to ask you very quickly, is the phrase hearth and home that's used in Heller just irrelevant to this analysis?
Yes, Judge Haynes.
Okay.
It is irrelevant.
Okay. So
hearth
the Supreme
and
Court
home.
Just didn't really know what they were talking about when they used that phraseology.
Oh, no, Your Honor.
Because they're pretty careful with their words. They write a lot of them, but they write them carefully.
Let's be very careful with those words, Judge Haynes. Let's be very careful with them. Let me read you what McDonald says. That Heller holds. In Heller, we held that individual self-defense is the central component of the Second Amendment right. Period. Didn't mention home, didn't mention hearth. A few lines later, thus, this is McDonald, thus, Heller concluded that citizens must be permitted, quote, to use handguns for the core lawful purpose of self-defense, end quote, period. The core right under the Second Amendment is self-defense, armed self-defense. This court in BATF said exactly that.
Mr. Cooper, you saved some time for rebuttal.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Mr. Mitchell.
May it please the court. The Constitution permits the state of Texas to limit concealed handgun licenses to persons over the age of 21 or persons over the age of 18 who are serving in or veterans of the armed forces or National Guard. Establishing minimum age laws of this sort falls well within the state's police powers. And it cannot be denied that at the time the 14th Amendment was ratified and at the time the Second Amendment was enacted, the common law age of majority was 21.
What animated the exception for 18-year-olds who had military training?
What animated the statutory requirement in the Militia Act?
No, within the present Texas statutory scheme.
It was a political compromise. And initially, when the law was enacted...
The question was, what in your view, animated that exception? Why was that written in there?
Well, in 1995, the minimum age was established at 21 for everyone, and then it wasn't until 2005 when the legislature allowed some 18-year-olds, but not all, to carry concealed handguns. The rationale...
Well, it's a little embarrassing that 10 guys, to say that a guy coming home from Afghanistan after the heavy combat can't carry a gun.
Well, he can, if he's a veteran.
I understand.
I'm sorry.
But you can't. There are these limitations. You have no constitutional rights of self-protection.
Well, the rationale that the legislature used when they lowered it to the age of 18 for veterans was that they would have more training in using firearms and therefore are more likely to handle them responsibly. And rough
that
cuts.
That was the rationale for not allowing regular 18 to 20-year-olds, right? Because they wouldn't have gun training, they wouldn't have the maturity, they might not have the appropriate response.
That's correct. And there's empirical.
So that's consistent. If you're in the military, you would have been trained and be able to handle a firearm, whereas if you had no training.
That's right.
Just an immature college kid, maybe you.
And there's empirical evidence showing that persons between the ages of 18 and 20 have an increased propensity toward violent crime and handgun violence.
Do we need to decide the question that I was asking your opponent about whether Texas is required to allow concealed carry under some circumstances?
I don't think it's necessary for this court to resolve that question. The court could issue a narrow holding that establishing a minimum age of 21 for the carriage of handguns outside the home falls within the state's police power, and it's not necessary to explore whether the Second Amendment would require a state to permit the carriage of handguns outside the home.
Is there currently litigation with Texas over its banning of open carry? Because as I recollect, it bans open carry for everybody other than, I think, police officers.
That's correct. That's what the law says. There's no litigation of which I'm aware. The plaintiffs in this case aren't asserting a right to open carry. They're only asserting a right to carry handguns, either openly or concealed. So they're not saying the Second Amendment requires the state to permit open carry. It's just that the Second Amendment requires the state to permit some form of carriage of handguns outside.
And it does allow carriage in your car.
Yes, that's right. Okay. It also allows the possession of handguns in your home, even if you're under the age of 21. And it also allows 18 to 20-year-olds to carry a long gun anywhere for any purpose whatsoever without getting a license in advance from the state. So for the plaintiffs to assert that we're somehow taking away the rights of 18 and 20-year-olds to defend themselves by virtue of this law.
Oh, they have to defend themselves with a shotgun?
Well, they can. They're permitted to defend themselves with a shotgun.
That's a strange thing.
But they still have the right.
They have these 18-year-olds running around with a 30-30 or 12-gauge shotgun. You can hit. You're a lot more accurate with those things than you are with a pea shooter.
That's right. There's a jurisdictional issue in this case that I'd like to discuss briefly, and that's the issue of mootness, because Ms. Jennings and Ms. Harmon are over the age of 21. Their claims against the state are moot, and they should be dismissed from this case and their names removed from the caption. Now, our friends in opposition assert that these plaintiffs should remain in the case, even though they have nothing more than an ideological grievance.
I mean, that was decided in BATF.
It was.
Well, I mean, I didn't hear him argue to the contrary, so I don't know if that's worth any of your time.
That's fine. In the brief, they do
it. We've still got Mr. Payne. We've still got the NRA. I mean, the issue isn't going away because these two people have gotten older.
That's correct. But we're respectfully asking the court to reject the proposition that an ideological litigant.
We're bound by the mootness finding.
That's good. There were several issues that came up in Mr. Cooper's argument, and one was that he asserted that this court is controlled by Heller to rule against the state. And the Heller opinion makes clear that its holding is a narrow one, and Heller does not in any way purport to rule on the constitutionality of laws that restrict handgun carriage outside the home. Heller is clear that handguns must be permitted, but it does not say that the state is required to allow the carriage of handguns outside the home. Heller leaves this question open. Now, we're not saying that Heller compels a ruling in our favor either, but neither litigant in this case can say that Heller dictates a conclusion one way or the other.
Now, you mentioned the state of the law at the time the 14th Amendment was passed. Is that an inquiry that we have to make, or is it enough that the 14th Amendment incorporates the rights in the Second Amendment, taking us back to the late 1700s?
We don't think there's any need for an inquiry because it's undisputed that at the time the 14th Amendment was ratified, the age of 21 was considered the lawful age of majority. The disagreement between the state and the plaintiffs is over the relevance of that undeniable fact. I mean, the text of the 14th Amendment itself enshrines the age of 21 as the relevant age of majority for voting. That's in Section 2 of the 14th Amendment. So it's difficult to maintain that a constitutional provision that explicitly recognizes the age of 21 as the relevant minimum age for voting somehow took away the state's prerogative to use the age of 21 as the proper age of majority for handgun carriage.
Then they amended that for voting to 18.
They amended it for voting.
That's what Mr. Cooper would say. Well, that's great, but now that the age of majority is 18 in Texas and in most states, does that alter the calculus?
No, we think that helps us because a constitutional amendment was necessary to establish an 18-year-old voting age in the states. And that constitutional amendment was limited to voting. It did not say that the age of 18 is now the constitutionally enshrined age of majority for all purposes. And the very fact that a constitutional amendment was needed to lower the voting age to 18 meant that the courts were not able to impose that on the states absent a constitutional amendment. So we very much think the 26th Amendment is in line and supports the contentions that we're making. Heller is a strongly originalist opinion, and it's clear that the scope of gun rights, as enforced by the courts, must be evaluated by looking at the historical context that existed at the time of ratification of the Second and 14th Amendment. The fact that states may have on their own lowered the age of majority to 18 in other contexts does not take away or forfeit their prerogative to maintain the age of 21 as a minimum age in other contexts. The plaintiff's argument is implying that no good deed goes unpunished, that by giving 18-year-olds some privileges, the state is thereby forfeiting its prerogative to withhold
a subset of other privileges. Well, maybe since they're the only ones who can't buy alcohol who are adults, then maybe they're the only ones who should have guns because everybody else can get drunk and go out with their guns.
Perhaps. That's not a theory the plaintiffs have advanced.
But the fact is, I mean, it seems to me we have different ages out there for different things. I mean, gambling, we kind of went through this. You weren't here, but the last argument, we went through all the things that 18-year-olds can't do in many states, gambling, drinking in some places, buying cigarettes, et cetera. I guess now some states are legalizing marijuana, same thing. I don't know. I haven't analyzed
that. Sometimes
the
minimum age can be 21. Sometimes it can be age 18. The Constitution does not force the states into setting the age at 18 for every single purpose. And that's essentially what the plaintiffs are arguing in their brief, that somehow the age of 18 has acquired some talismanic significance under the Constitution. That can't be squared with the original meaning that prevailed in 1791 or in 1868, nor can it be squared with current practice, because there are many legal privileges the state withholds from persons under the age of 21.
So returning veterans at 19 years old are not reached by this regulation, but a person who is 19 who has gone through and gotten a gun license and can comply with all those requirements, is disqualified. You accept the military, but you don't accept your own training.
That's right. It's a rule, and sometimes rules are over-inclusive and under-inclusive.
Yes, they are.
It's not a perfect fit.
But, But that takes you back to that's very helpful to you, so long as we're talking about a rational basis test itself. But if you crank it up to an intermediate level, or push it up to one of those levels, put aside the labels under equal protection to the higher levels of scrutiny, then some of this becomes questionable.
Well, even under intermediate scrutiny, Judge Higginbotham, we think that constitutional standard still tolerates some rough cuts. And we see that in the Supreme Court decisions upholding military conscription that applies only to men. Doubtless there are some women who are better qualified to be soldiers than some of the out-of-shape men, but we don't require a perfect means and fit there, even when we're applying intermediate scrutiny. Now, if the standard were strict scrutiny, it may be that there is a tighter means and fit required, but the implication of that is that no minimum age would ever be constitutionally acceptable, because no minimum age will be able to perfectly delineate those who are capable of handling a handgun from those who aren't.
Well, let's get back to what core value or core right is being burdened. I mean, your opponent says you have this core right to self-defense, which includes walking down the street carrying a gun, whether openly or concealed. He was a little unclear about which one was required, that everybody's got, and that's what's getting burdened.
Well, the plaintiffs do not deny that states may establish minimum ages pursuant to their police powers. So there is a burden on the right to keep and bear arms. The question is one of justification. Is this a valid exercise of the state's police power? States often enact laws restricting speech activity pursuant to their police powers, and those are constitutional as long as they're valid measures to protect the health, safety, and morals of the general public.
You agree with him that the core value is beyond the hearth and home, that it includes walking down the street with a gun?
We do agree that the Second Amendment applies outside the home.
I didn't ask that. Mm-hmm. I asked, what is the core?
Well, the core is the right to keep and bear arms, and keeping arms implies that you have the right to keep them in your home.
It sounds like you and Mr. Cooper are not that far apart on some very basic principles.
We're not far apart on the general principle. We're disagreeing on the
just
scope.
The details,
we're disagreeing on the scope of the state's police power.
We disagree on 3 years.
I think that's right. I'm not sure whether the plaintiffs concede that a state could establish 18 as a minimum age. It's not clear in the brief, but I believe they would agree with us on that.
Well, how would you describe the constitutional right then?
It's the right to keep and bear arms.
Okay.
But when it's incorporated against the states retain their police powers to regulate for health, safety, and morals. And the judicial inquiry is to ask whether this is a genuine and valid use of the police power, or whether it's a pretext for disarming the citizenry. If Texas tried to say the minimum age for carrying a handgun was the age of 70 or 80, and tried to imply that 70-year-olds and 80-year-olds are more fit to carry handguns, that's likely to be a pretext.
Over 70 carrying them.
Right. But that's an example of a pretextual use of the police power.
Yeah.
It's not plausible to say that Texas is engaged in pretext here when 21 is a traditionally recognized age of majority.
Well, I guess the reason I asked then, and you just again alluded to this whole incorporation, is because Texas's ban on concealed carry was in 1871. So if
correct.
The relevant time period for inquiry is the 1860s, 1870s, then that would seem to square. I mean, they had a concealed carry ban for everybody.
That's right.
And then the 1995 carry bill was sort of an exception to that. But if we're only looking at the 1790s, as your opponent would suggest, then that becomes less helpful. Although
right.
Heller looked at a much broader frame than the 1790s. I'm sorry, Mr. Cooper, I just disagree with you on that. But taking his argument.
Yeah, it's a hard question whether states could categorically prohibit handgun carriage outside the home by everyone. That's a hard question. Heller does not purport to answer that. And as Your Honor pointed out, there is some evidence surrounding the ratification of the 14th Amendment suggesting that these types of laws were in place. But the 14th Amendment does say that you have a right to bear arms, and that implies that you have the right to carry arms for your self-defense outside the home. But I don't think it's necessary for this Court to resolve all of those difficult questions, because this is a targeted regulation of 20-year-olds and under, and it's using the type of age of majority that was traditionally recognized at common law, and it's buttressed by empirical evidence showing that people in this age category are disproportionately likely to engage in violent crime or handgun violence. So that makes this a relatively easy case, even though I certainly agree with Your Honor there may be some more difficult questions presented at the margins involving situations where Texas has not yet attempted to extend the regulatory powers of the state. Now, Mr. Cooper has relied heavily on the Militia Act. There are several problems with his argument. I mean, first, the Militia Act does not help Ms. Jennings or Ms. Harmon, even though they shouldn't be in this case because their claims are moot. But there's no basis that the Militia Act can be used to say that those two individuals have a constitutional right to carry a handgun. They were
excluded. Well, and everybody on this panel is too old under the Militia Act.
Over the age of 45, right. But I think more
except for Judge Higginbotham. Yeah. He's forever young.
More fundamentally, though, a statutory requirement to do something does not signify a constitutional entitlement. If one looks at the Militia Act, persons between the ages of 18 and 45, males, able-bodied, were required to enroll in the militia. That does not mean they had a constitutional right to do so. Texas would not violate the Constitution by establishing a 35-year-old maximum age for enrollment in the National Guard. It may have been that 200 years ago, persons over the age of 35, if they were male and able-bodied, were required to enlist in the militia. But that does not mean that they had a constitutional right to do so. And that's one of the problems with the argument. A statutory requirement does not mean that they had a constitutional right to be doing what the federal statute required.
Well, and if BATF isn't set aside, I mean, that whole analysis has been done.
That's right.
By recollection, at some length.
And we don't think it can, it's possible, it's not possible for this court to logically distinguish the ruling in BATF from the situation here. It cannot be that 18 to 20-year-olds have a constitutional right to carry handguns, but they also can be categorically banned from purchasing those handguns, that they would, under the plaintiff's theory of this case, have a constitutional right to carry outside the home. There's just really no way to square those two rulings. And if this court were to depart from the panel, it would necessitate en banc rehearing. And there really is no way that this court, I think, can faithfully adhere to the holding of the previous case and also rule in the plaintiff's favor here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Cooper, you have 5 minutes.
Thank you again, Judge Clement. McDonald, and I do want to stress the importance of the words used by the Heller and the McDonald court. McDonald says that the Second Amendment, like other incorporated constitutional rights, applies identically to the states. It applies the same. McDonald and Heller also say that the scope of the Second Amendment was enshrined at the ratification by what the people understood that scope to be. Now, is revealed by the Militia Act and the militia provisions of all the states. The state is arguing that somehow it is exempt from Heller, notwithstanding McDonald, and it can adjust any age it wants to, not just for the Second Amendment, any age of majority it wants to, but for any constitutional right.
Well, no, I think he's saying any age of majority has historical underpinnings. I mean, I think if the age of majority was suddenly raised to 50, I don't think he'd be making the same argument. There's no historical basis for that.
Historical basis for raising the age of majority?
To 50?
The Constitution doesn't control that. The Constitution controls not the age of majority that the state...
Is that the age of majority in the history of the United States has varied between, has been largely 21, and since then varied to be between 18 and 21. So in that world, which is what BATF also says, in that world, you've got some running room if you're a state.
The Constitution says nothing about what the age of majority should be. What the Constitution is protects people. And the question is, who are the people within it? Who are the people within it? Now, the Constitution also says, under Roper and a number of other decisions, that at some point we do delineate between children and adults. And for constitutional purposes, everyone that I know of, that's age 18. You can execute an 18-year-old. An 18-year-old can have an abortion. They don't need parental consent. 18-year-olds are adults, and they have full constitutional rights.
Well, a 14-year-old can have an abortion without parental consent. So a 14-year-old can have an abortion without parental consent.
Which makes my point.
Should a 14-year-old be able to carry a handgun?
Your Honor, There is no historical basis for suggesting a 14-year-old can do that. But my point is, constitutional rights aren't determined by whatever the state may say is the age of majority. Certainly, every adult who has attained the age of majority surely has full constitutional rights, but by no means, Your Honor, does that establish the minimum? The other point I want to make before I leave the podium here is Judge Higginbottom mentioned the military exception. Even if this case is determined under intermediate scrutiny, notwithstanding the severe burden that it places, and by the way, the fact that BATF upheld a federal restriction on the purchase of a gun, it did so because it didn't severely burden the use, possession for the core right of self-defense, because of that. If it had, then what BATF said was strict scrutiny would have to apply.
Well, that was at the second step. I mean, there was a debate in the case about whether we even had to reach the second step. We did so out of an abundance of caution.
And you've heard me, my position on that.
If you don't like that opinion, I don't think you would. I don't expect you to.
Your Honor, with respect to intermediate scrutiny, even if you apply intermediate scrutiny, as Judge Higginbottom points out, with the military exception, there is no reasonable fit between means and ends here. The justification for denying 18 to 20s is maturity, some vagrant proposition, unsupported by any empirical data, at least in the legislative record, that individuals 18 and 20 are not mature enough.
Can't you just use common sense sometimes?
Sure, sure.
Would you have to have empirical data for that kind of a policy, policy concern?
I think you would have to have empirical data to say that all 18 to 20 civilians are immature, but all 18 to 20 military people are not. That's irrational. That has no empirical data. It has no common sense. It renders their statute incoherent.
All right,
and that's
out of time.
Thank you very much, Judge.